Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time for Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up term.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. That's right. I couldn't see the timer, so I don't know how long that was. But nevertheless,
10 seconds.
10 seconds. So it's short of our goal, but that's okay. That is okay. I'm Teron Davenport. You are now talking with TD back in studio. Got my guy Elijah on my left hand side, making things happen. Got each of you listening, so you know it's going to be a good day. It's an awesome show. Ladies and gentlemen, we have Mel Kiper coming on. You saw what he did. He mocked Greg Rousseau to the Titans at pick 22. I need to know why. I got questions, so I'm going to ask them. And then, of course, we're going to get back in the mix of things. We got Chris Sanders coming on. Run TMC. We're not going to talk about the running game. We're going to go through the secondary because – it's the offseason. We're going to shift courses, but we can't shift the theme music, so you'll definitely hear that Run DMC fresh for you. Man, I'm just happy to be back in the studio. You know what I'm saying? A great week down in Mobile, Alabama, getting to look at a lot of these prospects. And, folks, I networked. I did it for each of you. Unfortunately, I networked during a appearance on Stillman and Friends, but, hey, man, when T. Martin walks by, you got to stop him and you got to get his number. So we're going to have him on the show. Got Josh Palm. We got a bunch of you're going to like the lineup we have. And we're going to start it next week. As a matter of fact, I'm going to jump into this draft thing and talk some shop. But before we do that, I mean, there was news. I haven't spoken to any of you guys or girls about Todd Downing. New Titans offensive coordinator, Todd Downing. And it's interesting because, you know, there were a lot of people who wanted to jump off a bridge when they saw this hiring. You know, some wanted Jay Gruden. Some wanted Pep Hamilton. I thought Hamilton would have been a solid hire. Some wanted other folks. But, hey, I think continuity is a key thing here. And trust me, from a well-placed source, this team, that's what they were looking for, continuity. They wanted to make sure that terminology, it's never the exact same, but they wanted to make sure it was similar. And that's what you have in keeping Todd Downing. You have similar terminology. But there's other bonuses, and there are things that aren't really being talked about. I am definitely going to write about this in the near future once we get Todd Downing available to us. The biggest thing for me is his time, and everybody's pointing to the time in Oakland, and rightfully so. That's when he called plays 2017. There was a bit of a struggle. Okay, yeah, he – did an excellent job with David Carr, right? And making sure that he was, I mean, he got to, he was voted as a Pro Bowl player, you know, with Downing as his QB coach. Obviously, he did a, did I say David Carr?
I think you did, yeah.
Yeah, Derek Carr. I got the brother. I mentioned the brother, but no,
they're
Derek
related.
Carr. He did a great job with Derek Carr, and Derek Carr made the Pro Bowl with him as a QB coach. Obviously, it's going to be Romo. Romo, I always say that because I use the concept that Jerry Jones called Romo friendly and applied it to Ryan Tannehill. It's going to be Tannehill friendly. The thing that no one is talking about that I want to point to is his time in Minnesota. And here's why. He was, you know, a position coach there, but he was a position coach there under my guy, John DeFilippo. Now, Mike Zimmer was the head coach. Same type of approach and mindset to football, right, as Mike Vrabel. Defensive mindset. Listen, we want to run the football. We want to be able to score points. But above all else, we want to play complementary football. Now, a quarterback like Kirk Cousins that likes to turn the football over, you may not be able to be too complementary. But when you have a guy who does a lot of play action and that's what you want as far as to make him excel as a quarterback, you got to run the football. You know what happened to John DeFilippo? Because he didn't run the football enough, and he had that horse, Dalvin Cook, back there. He got fired. Right? So I think in this case, Todd Downing saw firsthand the importance of balance on offense and why you really absolutely have to, when you have a defensive-minded head coach, you absolutely have to make sure you emphasize running the football. He saw that. Because what happened when DeFilippo got fired? Kevin Stefanski took over. They emphasized running the football. They got better. Stefanski served as a year as an OC, moved on to Chicago, to Cleveland. You know what the Browns are doing.
Pretty good.
You saw what they did. You saw what they did here. You know what I'm saying? So you know what they're doing. But more importantly, he saw that firsthand. And he saw the reason why it is so much better to have balance. That's crucial for this offense here. That's one of the things that Arthur Smith, how many times during a game did you look and say, okay, wow, 17 passes, 15 runs. Wow, that's balance. And then at the end of the game, you're at like 30-something passes, 28 runs. It's balance. For the most part, that's something that Arthur Smith did consistently, and that's actually what was his calling card, to balance on offense. A 2,000-yard rusher, a 1,000-yard receiver, a quarterback that threw for over 3,500 yards, and a guy that fell 16 frippin' yards short. You almost had two 1,000-yard receivers. Corey, come on, man. Corey Davis 16. Fell just short.
That's one catch away.
One catch. But you know what? He did it despite missing two games. So let's make sure we throw that caveat in there. But the point being, Todd Downing saw what it takes to be successful as a play caller. That's going to transfer to this situation. Now, am I saying the Titans are going to be, you know, average 30 points a game again? Am I saying they're going to, you know, be top five, top three, top four in total yards again? No, I'm not saying that. But I'm saying that the table is set for that type of success. There's obviously a bunch of things that have to fall into place. Corey Davis, is it going to be him? Is it going to be Marvin Jones? Is it going to be Josh Palmer? Is it going to be Dwayne Esker? You know, who's it going to be as the receiver opposite of A.J. Brown? That's something else you have to consider. But I'm just focusing on the play-calling aspect. I think this is a really good opportunity for Todd Downing to come in and establish himself as an offensive player. And you look at what, offensive coach. You look at what Jonnu Smith said on Sirius Radio. You know, he had a good comment. This is what he said. One of the best offensive minds I've been around. He just knows ball so well. We're putting the pieces in place that we need. I think we got a lot of room for success. That was Jonnu Smith. And he did manage to get in there that, you know, they're putting the pieces in places to succeed. Another thing he said in that quote on Sirius Radio was his contract situation, you know, and that's obviously going to be something else that they have to look at. I know that Todd Downing is very close to Jonnu Smith. Money talks, for sure. Make no mistake about it. But I think that relationship, understanding, you know, how things went last year, and how things can get better. Because remember, Jonnu Smith, 8 touchdowns in the red zone.
A lot of success early.
I think that could have a lot to do with him wanting to come back. He clearly, he's an establishment on the team. We'll see what happens there. But, you know, with all those things in place, I think this was a solid move by the Titans. And they somewhat looked at other options. I feel all along this was the decision that they were going to make. You know, so it's a solid choice. We'll see how things continue to progress with the season and with the offseason, really. So I think Titans fans, just hold on before you jump. You know what I mean? Just hold on. I think you might have something here with Todd Downing as your OC. So I wanted to open up with that part. Obviously, you know, as we move on, we're going to shift to draft and look a little bit at the roster. But before we do, because I know you all want to hear Mel Kiper, but, you know, we got to push that back a little bit. I want you to hear other things in the show,
there's
too.
There's a schedule here.
Yeah, there's a schedule, you know, an agenda. We have an itinerary. But before we progress to the next part of the itinerary, I have an itinerary for you, each of you that are listening. You found the podcast, so tell someone else. Search Talking with TD. When they find it on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or what have you, tell them to subscribe. And once they subscribe, tell them to rate, review. I appreciate you. We pay these bills. We'll be right back with Chris Anderson.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
Fresh. That's right. Talking with TD, special guest, Gary Coleman. What's going on?
And his sidekick, Robert Parrish.
We walk around, just look like the number 10.
How you doing, man?
Hey, man, I'm doing. Hey, listen, I'm doing really well. Last week we didn't get to do this, so
you dissed me, man.
Yeah, I apologize, but you know, the Senior Bowl kind of
before, like, oh, I can't do it, man. I gotta take my free throws. You know, I'm Robert Parrish. I'm like, come on, man.
Gotta take the free throws, man. Need to sink them.
yeah, that's what's up, man. Well, it's good. It's good that we back. You know, back on time, man, and we rolling, man. It's good to hear from you, Bob.
Yeah, for sure, man. Always, and before we get on, shout you out, man, to Facebook Live, a good man. Opportunity for motivation. I definitely make sure the listeners tune into that, man. It's no joking. It's all real talk. You know what I mean? And I think that's a necessary part of a life as well. In addition to all this, you come here for the jokes. You go to Facebook Live for the real talk, the real rap.
No, because, man, we got so many things, and I know I'm getting upset. We got so many things that are going on in life right now. We have people hating each other and people, you know, gossiping about each other and people saying bad things. Why don't you use the tools that you have to make a difference, to love someone, to be there for somebody? And I'm just taking a tool, just inspire somebody to help them. That's what it's all about, man.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And speaking of so many people saying bad things, you know, that's what's going on with Shane Bowen. Everybody's saying bad things about him.
So, people need to stop it, man.
Yeah. Give that a chance. Well, I'm gonna get into that actually on the final segment. I'm gonna talk about that, but I know our goal today was to discuss the DBs.
Yeah.
You know, so let's get right into them. We'll start with the starters, Adoree Jackson and Malcolm Butler. What are your thoughts with them? What's the direction that this Titans team need to go?
I don't know what's going on with the Adoree situation. You know, he's in it and he's out, and you know he's gonna play and then he's not gonna play. I think what hurt him is getting hurt early.
Yeah.
You get hurt early, then you're not going to play with confidence. You're not going to be sure. And I don't know if it was a knee or whatever it was, but the time, the reps, the things were taken away. So when he came back, we saw that he was rusty. We saw that, yeah, he had some speed, but there was no explosiveness. And we saw that when he went against Green Bay against Adams. He couldn't run with him. And then you have Butler. I think Butler overall played solid, you know, but there was times when he got beat because he doesn't have that top-end speed. Yeah, he had 4 interceptions, but and Adoree had 0, but I think Butler was solid. I said he was okay, but when he went against the guys that can run, that's where he struggled. I know he can cover in the intermediate routes, but when you're talking about a guy that's running a go route or a post, he continuously got beat. So I think that's where the struggle was at.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it's interesting because there was a stretch when they had the bigger receivers that they were going against, and he was taking them on and doing his thing. But you're right. You know, they go against the Colts with T.Y. Hilton. That's a different ball game. They go against the Steelers. Like, if they were to take him off of my man from Notre Dame, name slips my mind, the rookie, number 11. If they were to take him off of him.
Chase Claypool,
and put him on the other guy, then that would have been a problem because he cannot deal with those smaller, shifty type of guys, the route runners, the route technicians. So that's a good point there. And that's where you need Adoree. But as you mentioned, it's just always something with him, in my opinion. It just always seems like there's something. So I think that does leave some to be desired at the cornerback position. But after those two, you got the nickel situation. And, you know, you're looking at Christian Fulton. You're looking at Desmond King. I mean, does Desmond King get brought back?
I don't know. I mean, if you look at this whole secondary, who had the most interceptions? The safeties. You had Hooker who had 4. You have Joseph who's gone and had 2. You had Fulton who had 1. Jackson 0. Adoree 0. So there's need to be more production. And just like when you talked about those two guys, I mean, who was dominant amongst those guys? There was no dominant guy.
Yeah.
You need a guy that comes in on nickel or dime that says, you know what, I'm shutting him down. We don't have a guy that's going to shut him down, whoever him is, their best inside guy. You have to have that. Because if you look at the offenses, just say we got Kansas City. We have, Green Bay that has those slot receivers that can move, that can catch, they're big. And if you don't have a guy in nickel and dime that says, I'm going to stop him, that's where the struggle is going to happen.
Yeah, and then even take it another step, you look at Buffalo, right? You got Cole Beasley working the slot, and Stephon Diggs and John Brown stretching the field. You need somebody that could cover those underneath routes. And I think that's where Fulton would actually be more useful than Desmond King. I think Desmond King is a guy that they should bring back, but that role, that nickel role, I think is going to be combined between the two. I like Desmond King as a blitzer. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting because, you know, I want to see what money he wants because he has Drew Rosenhaus as his agent. So, you know, they're not going to try to take any shorts. So we'll see there. But I definitely think Fulton is a guy that will absolutely have to be in consideration for that nickel spot. But I said I like Desmond King as a blitzer. Well, a guy I like even more as a blitzer is Kenny Vaccaro. So let's talk about the safeties, right?
Yeah.
Vaccaro, do you think he could possibly be a cap casualty?
I think that's what's going to happen to him. I mean, he's a great player. And, you know, the one thing I love about Vaccaro is he came up with some key plays. I mean, if you look at last year when they played Baltimore in the playoffs, who made the interception? Vaccaro.
Yeah.
Vaccaro made a key interception because they were driving. He gets an interception. He plays underneath. He makes an interception. So I don't know. He might be a cap casualty unless they come to him and say, you know, we need you to take a pay cut. And Mike Vrabel and J-Rob in that organization is going to have to say, you know what, is he a key piece to this defense? That's the key. Is he a key piece to this defense? And if they have any doubt or any slight, that he's going to be gone.
And that's
what's going
to
happen.
And that's, I think, really what it's going to come down to is it Armani Hooker? Is it going to be like in Lion King, right, where, you know, he says, it's your time. You know what I mean? Is he going to get held to the sky? You know what I'm saying? And be time for Simba to rise up, you know? And I think that's the thing with Armani Hooker. Is it his time? Do you think it is?
I think it is because if you look at some of the games that he played in, he made some key interceptions. I think he made a key interception against, was it Houston? The first game at home.
Yeah, that was – no, the first game at home was Jacksonville.
No, I'm just saying when they played Houston at home, when they played
at home, okay.
He made an interception in the end zone. I can't remember, but he's always coming up with key plays. But here's the deal. I want to see how he can handle it having a full-time job. Mm-hmm. That's the difference. Mm-hmm. When you come in sparingly, you're fresh and you're this, but I want to see how you handle it when your slate is full and you're playing the whole game. You know, and going back to Fulton, you know, I don't know what he can do because he hasn't really been on the field that much. I mean, we've seen spurts. He got an interception early, but after he got the interception, he was nowhere to be found.
Yeah.
I mean, I went and looked in the lost and found at the YMCA. I'm like, is Fulton there?
Didn't
I'm
see
like,
him.
No, he ain't here.
Another guy that was lost and found was Dane Cruikshank. So you look at how he rounds out that safety crew.
Yeah.
I mean – they like him as a special teamer especially, but he's a guy that they've used and dined before. You go back to the Ravens game in 19, the playoff game, he was in there. So I wonder if he's someone that will also help push Kenny Vaccaro out of the door. I would hate to say Vaccaro would be gone, but there's definitely a possibility.
But you know they want younger players.
Yeah.
I mean, you know that's how the NFL is. You know what NFL stands for, not for long. You're going to be out of here. But – I just think that we need to see more of Cruikshank. I see the guys that we're talking about, we really don't know because it's been in spurts.
Yeah.
We don't need to see spurts. We need to see impact. And that's kind of what we need to see with this secondary. All the guys that we just named are just guys. And I'm not saying that to be disrespectful. I'm just commentating as a commentator. Those are a whole bunch of guys, but is there any impact players? We need an impact player that's a shutdown corner, a shutdown safety, and a guy that said, you know what, I am going to be the best player on this defense. And last year, one of those guys we had was Byard. But since Byard's been struggling, and he got one interception, and that was against, I can't remember what team it was. He got an interception. I think it was against the Lions, I think.
Mm-hmm. It was the Lions. Yep.
It was the Lions. And, you know, he's been playing inconsistent, so he's going to have to step up. So this whole secondary as a whole, we have a whole bunch of guys, but we need impact players.
Yeah, and I left Byard out purposely because, you know, I think that's a whole different conversation.
I don't know what is going on.
I mean, when I look at it, I go back to Dean Pease's scheme, and I look at how guys like Rodney Harrison, like Ed Reed, like Bernard Pollard, like so many safeties have done well. And then I go back to conversations I've had with Kevin, and then go back to conversations I've had with Vaccaro where they say that it's such a safety-friendly defense and it really allows them to play the position. And then you go back and you look at this past year, he wasn't really able to play like top down like he normally does. You know, he's such an excellent center fielder. So, I mean, if you're Shane Bowen, how do you bounce? What do you do with this defense?
I just think that with Byard, I think we always say this term pressure bust pipes. Mm-hmm. I just think that with a lot of the leaders gone, like Casey and Logan, he was put in a leadership position. Because if you look at his interview, you know, after they lost the playoff game, the one thing he said is, I got to be a better leader.
Yeah.
So they just put that mantle on him and say, okay, he had a great year the year before. He's automatically the leader. But maybe he wasn't ready for that.
How
you know,
about
that's what we talk about. It's like, because everybody's looking to him, and when everybody's looking to him, the pressure's on. But the year before, nobody was looking to him because he didn't have to be that guy. This year, he had to be that guy, and I think the pressure got to him a little bit.
That's a really interesting perspective, and I can't disagree. And, you know, I'm very high on Byard, and I think you may be on to something there. I just want to see just some kind of turnaround. And the thing is, it wasn't just – you know, playing the ball in the air. There was bad angles that he took. And I just want to see if there's a way he could work that out, because when he's on point, I'm on record. I said he's the best safety in the game.
He is.
I don't know that I can say that right now, but when he's on point, he is.
Yeah. But you know what I think it is, too, and I'm not giving him a pass, which I am giving him a pass, is this is – just looking, I don't think that he was in shape. And when I say in shape – I'm talking about football shape.
Mm-hmm.
When you're in football shape, you look fast, you look crisp, you look like, okay, I looked the part. But look at some of the angles that he was taking.
Yeah.
Look at some of the tackles that he missed. Look at some of the interceptions that he could have had that he didn't get. And I'm not saying – when I say out of shape, I'm not saying he's just sitting on the couch eating, you know, Tootsie Rolls and watching, you know, Robert Parrish play basketball. I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about football shape. And that's why the COVID hurt a lot of people, because they weren't in football shape. Just a thought.
Yeah, and it's really – his trainer is right here, Jason Spray, who is an outstanding trainer. That could be the case. But, you know what, I will say this. If that was the case, it's not going to be the same this year.
Oh,
because
no.
He is a guy that definitely is always looking to get better. So that could be the area for improvement for him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, man. Well, Dad, we ran right through that, man. I didn't mention Kareem.
Lewis,
hey, listen, that like Carl Lewis, I'll go with that. Yeah, we didn't mention Chris Jackson, Josh Kalu, you know, but these are guys, Ty Smith. I mean, these are guys that will be in the mix, but the draft is another option also, and I think they will draft a corner, so we'll get into that as the year moves on. But, Chris, I really appreciate you jumping on.
Bro.
We keep this thing rolling next week. We'll figure it out who to talk about.
Well, champ, you the man, Robert Parrish, man. I appreciate you, boss.
All right, Antoine Carr, that's who you had, ladies and gentlemen. Now, Chris Sanders, Titans legend. Appreciate you, man. Much love, man.
You too, man.
All right.
Hey, man, this is Kevin Byard, and I'm talking with TD.
All right, back from the break, talking with TD as promised. Special guest coming up, my ESPN teammate Mel Kiper. You guys know who he is, covers the draft. Mel, we appreciate you coming on. And I want to get right into it. Your mock draft, pick 22, you had the Titans taking Greg Rousseau. I just want to kind of get some feedback on you. What made you arrive at that decision?
Well, a couple of things, sir. I think you look at the needs of the team, pass rusher obviously lacking with Tennessee this year, which was obviously a major problem on that defense, getting after the quarterback. And we always know the finish games, you got to be closing games out with sacks and with pass rush, and they didn't have that. So I felt like Gregory Rousseau, had he played this year, he opted out, but had he played and built on what he did in 2019, when he had a phenomenal year getting after the quarterback, getting sacks and tackles for loss, and he also has the length people want, then I thought all of a sudden you'd be looking at, had he played this year and equaled that, Teron, you'd have been looking at a top 10, top 15 pick pretty much guaranteed. Now, because of the opt-out and only having that one great year, now maybe he drops down to 22. Now, maybe he doesn't, but if he does, I thought it would make sense getting a pass rusher. And, of course, Jalen Phillips, who took over the role of Rousseau at Miami, I have going 17 to the Raiders, he would also be a possibility if he were there at 22.
Do you have any concerns that he only played that position one year for Miami?
Yeah, I think that's the reason why that the opt-outs are going to be interesting this year, because not, you know, the one-year guys, I mean, ironically, you know, Ja'Marr Chase at LSU had one great year. Remember, he had with 23 catches, he improved to 84, and he opted out. So he's going to go second, third in the draft based on one great year. And Rousseau had that one great year. I would want to see him improve technique-wise, trying to get a secondary move, and I thought some coverage sacks. I wanted to see him, you know, anticipate the snap count a little bit better, do some things there, work on some things, you know, the finer points of being a great pass rusher, and then even improve on what he did, but he didn't have that chance. So that's why maybe he could still be there at that point. And it set up well when I did the mock, because, you know, Tennessee, number one, the pass rusher, and some of these pass rushers, even a Quiddy Pay from Michigan possibly could be there, maybe not. But when you look at Phillips, Rousseau, and Pay, you got to believe one of those three, and maybe two of those three, could still be there at pick number 22.
And that would be really good for this Titans team. That, as you said, they're starving for a pass rush. When you look at Phillips and you look at Rousseau, what are some of the things that you feel are different between the two?
Well, I think Phillips, to me, is an up-and-down guy. I mean, up and down, not in terms of his play, but he can play on his feet, play with his hand on the ground. He gives you a lot of versatility, dropping off and what have you there in terms of coverage and being a multi-dimensional threat coming off the edge and play different roles in that defensive scheme and different structure. I think when you look at Rousseau at down end, who can give you the length and the ability to bat down passes. And you can also, what I liked about Rousseau is, Teron, they moved him inside in 2019. So he made some disruptive plays inside in pass rush situations. So he brings in some versatility, but as a down lineman, where Phillips' versatility comes from that athleticism off the edge. So they're a little bit different in that regard. Ironically, they both wore the same number 15.
Yeah, yeah.
Rousseau was number 15.
Yeah.
Phillips picked up where he left off and wore that number 15 and played great football for Miami. But I think they're a little bit different in that regard.
Yeah, that's interesting. And it is funny, like you said, they both wore 15. And both are one-year guys. Of course, we know Phillips, you know, came from the West Coast, so it's a different situation. He's had more experience. I want to shift to the cornerback position. And I don't think at 22 they would take a corner, but do you see any guys that would be right there in that range that would definitely warrant some thinking?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, Ron. Caleb Farley, I don't think we'll get there. Now, he was an opt-out. He had a great year in 2019 in coverage. You know, tremendous ball skills, recovery, speed, all the things you want lengthwise and locating the football in coverage. But he's a former wide receiver, limited experience at corner, and he's not a real tackler yet. He's not one of those guys that's going to be, you know, show that ability to be, you know, like a safety-type corner who can in space make plays, come up and support the run. He missed some tackles. You know, I wanted to see him this year show a little bit more toughness against the run. Well, he didn't play this year. So you know, now he's kind of that one-dimensional cover guy. Now, maybe he will develop into it, but we didn't see it this year. So where does he go? He was a tough one to put in a mock draft. I gave him at 16 to Arizona. Mm. There are some that think maybe he goes in the top 10 to 12 in that area. But he could be maybe one for that reason. I don't think when you get to that point, Patrick Surtain II will be there, but it depends upon how he tests. Pro day is going to be very important for him. He was a little up and down in coverage, great technically, though. And he had some great battles in practice with Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle and all those Ruggs and Judy. So you know he's battle-tested. He likes a very fundamentally and technically sound, but he doesn't have the great talent of Farley. So I think he's a little bit different. But I think when you look at those two, maybe one of those two is still there. If they're not, then you're looking at maybe J.C. Horn,
yes.
Joe Horn's son, the cornerback from South Carolina, who put together a really impressive year and is kind of a plug-and-play starting cornerback.
And we're talking to Mel Kiper, ESPN NFL draft analyst. You mentioned him, but another guy that I think of, and it comes just from watching Georgia, obviously watching for Olujari, is Eric Stokes. So do you see him as a first-round option, or is he someone that would more be a day-two pick?
Interestingly enough, I put Tyson Campbell in the late first, his teammate, who's not as consistent a cover guy as Stokes, but has tremendous upside. So it's two different. I almost had, in fact, when I did, I always do like a second-round mock when I'm doing the first to make sure I have the right guys and needs, and we'll be doing second-round mocks as we get closer. I had Stokes in the second. He's a solid second-rounder.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he could be, maybe, if he tests great at pro day. Good football player. His game day evaluation grades were really good. I went Campbell, talent sometimes. Hines wins out, he has the length, he has the athleticism, he should test off the charts if he does, even though he's still a little inconsistent and doesn't always locate the ball and do the things that some of the other corners do. On upside and getting the right coaching, maybe Tyson Campbell from Georgia jumps in there. But I'm with you on Stokes. Really good football player.
Yeah, he definitely stands out. And then let's shift over to the offensive side of the ball. And there's so many gadget guys. And being down in Mobile, you got to see Demetri Felton, obviously Dwayne Eskridge. He's someone, Kadarius Toney. And then you look outside of that, Tutu Atwell. There's so many guys that you could put in that slot position and just do so much with. Who are some of the guys that you like from that perspective?
Love Elijah Moore at Ole Miss. One of my favorite players in the draft. Just a great football player. Slot receiver, as you said, Ron, but a guy that I think can be an immediate star in this league for what they're going to ask him to do. And we know all about Jalen Waddle, what he's capable of doing. Elijah Moore is kind of a close second there. Same thing with Kadarius Toney, right in that mix. Tutu Atwell, I scouted his father. So I remember his father very well when he came out of Minnesota. Had a real good career in the Big Ten. Did a great job there for the Golden Gophers. I wrote him up in the 1998 draft report. He didn't get drafted, but he was a heck of a player. And ironically, he was 5'8 and a quarter, 167. Now you got 2'2 at well, you're playing now at about 5'9, 165 with tremendous speed. So that's another situation there where you look at the bloodlines there. His father had a heck of a career in the Big Ten. So I'm with you on 2'2 at well. Have a second, early second round grade on him. Eskridge, former corner, was a cornerback, receiver at Western Michigan. Great quickness and a tough guy to cover. Consistency, he was at times, is a little bit of an issue, but that's it. Nico Collins, can't forget about him, the big receiver. But as a gadget guy, as you say, Amari Rodgers would be in that mix. Shai Smith, South Dakota. Kate Johnson, South Dakota State's really interesting as well. So there's a lot of receivers. I have 31 to 38, anywhere between 31 to 38 wide receivers, all with fifth to sixth round grades, and 40 right now with grades inside of round 7. So there's going to be a lot of guys, inside, outside, slot guys, return men. If you need those types of players, this is the draft to get one.
What about Rondale Moore from Purdue?
He would be another one. He's exactly that. I mean, I thought this year, from what he was as a freshman, he wasn't as explosive. I think he lost a little bit of that. Maybe it was a little extra weight. But I think if he gets back to where he was as a freshman, no question about it. I thought he was a more impressive player that first year at Purdue. But I think Rondale Moore definitely as a slot receiver would factor in, no doubt about it. I just really think Elijah Moore from Ole Miss would be the guy I would think early second round, mid-second round. I don't think he gets past that point.
Hey, well, he's kind of like A.J. Brown's little brother, so I'm sure Titans fans would be happy about that. When you look at these players, because obviously you watch a lot of film, and that's one thing I like about you is you're watching film, the actual All-22, not just some highlight reels like some people do.
Mm-hmm.
How do you go about this year as far as, like, you take University of Washington, right? Levi Onwuzurike, Keith Taylor, these are guys that I know are going to be in the picture, but how do you judge, like, how you think they'll be able to do, knowing that you have to go back to 19 to watch their tape?
That's the tough part. I think when you look at Keith Taylor, has the length, a good football player, with Elijah Molden and that secondary, a lot of talent there, a good Senior Bowl week. I think he's a second-round pick, maybe a late one, but depending upon how he tests, maybe a two. Levi Onwuzurike, didn't opt it out, but the Senior Bowl week, they said, well, he didn't play as well as he was expected to play. It's hard trying to go down there when you didn't play, and you can't simulate games. And that's a little unfair to the opt-outs. I thought they were kind of up against it going down there, and I think if you got something like Nico Collins flashed, we know what he is, a power forward type receiver, fine. But the guys that didn't, I'm not going to hold it against them. I think you got to realize that they didn't play. And like I said, even for a Trey Lance and a Dylan Raiden, they played one game this year, Trey Lance. So I'm not going to hold it against them for one game. And Dylan Raiden actually went down there, but I think he was a practice player of the week in Mobile, so did a great job. So I think you got to be careful, knocking the guys that didn't play down too much. It's going to be interesting on draft day to see if that happens. Some of these guys try and become real bargains. You might get a first-round caliber player that drops into the mid-second, or early second-round caliber player drops into the third or fourth. So it'll be interesting to see how these opt-outs are affected come late April.
And we're talking to Mel Kiper, ESPN NFL draft analyst. And you've been doing this for a long time, so I know there have been guys that you come across. Like for me, a good example a couple years ago, A.J. Brown was – I was just head over heels. You know what I mean? So everything he did, I was like, oh, this is really good. How do you balance that, right? As you look at way back in the day. Trev Alvarez, he wasn't the guy that really, you know, stood out to you. And we know the infamous quote. How do you balance the highs and lows with just, hey, look, let me just see what's on tape and avoid all that?
Hard. It really is. I got to go back, and I even brought up this year the quarterbacks. So between 2000 and 2016, they went in the first round. There were 44 in those 17 years, only four with the team that drafted them. Between Jared Goff's year in 2016 and Matthew Stafford's year in 2009, only one of the 22 quarterbacks drafted in the first round are with the team that drafted them, and that's Carson Wentz, and he's one that possibly could be traded.
Yeah.
So it's really hard for really any position. Quarterback obviously leading the way because these quarterbacks get forced up. But I think you got to try to weigh everything. I've always tried to do that. And try to also look, which I do during the summer, as guys when they were playing as freshmen, sophomores. I mentioned Rondale Moore, that first year at Purdue, the great year he had. And if they drop off a little bit, there are reasons. Football players do have injuries. They play through. You got to factor all that in. So what you're seeing may not be really accurate indication of what kind of player they are when they're 100%. There's a lot of things, different systems, different coaches come and go. That impacts players. So a lot of the things that you don't really see when you watch a player impact performance. And if you don't factor that in, I think you're kind of missing out on where that player should be rated.
And last thing, you hear the energy that you speak with, you know, when you talk about this draft. We see it on TV. What is it that fuels you so much? What do you love so much about this to do it for so long and still have that same energy as you did on day one?
I think you do, and as well. And it's, I think for 44 years, every draft's different. That's the thing. All the players are new. They're only going to go through this draft process once in their life. That's why I tell you, make sure you kind of maximize your value and maximize your ability. But to me, you're evaluating all different players. They all have different stories. They all got to this journey in a different path, and they all came to this position different ways. So it's fun, and the needs of the teams and the way free agency factors in and all the coaching changes. I think the fact that the enthusiasm comes from every year being different and every year being tough to really figure. And these mock drafts come out, and you have fun. I had six of the top seven hit last year, and then mock 1.0. I didn't have that in mock 5.0, Tron. So sometimes your first ideas are your best ideas, and sometimes that mock 1.0 turns out to be the one where you think you got everything in line, and you don't. So I think that the fact that it's such a guessing game and so hard to really predict and figure how these guys are going to be makes it that much more interesting, that much more enthusiasm surrounding these guys.
There you have it. Mel, I appreciate you, man. Thanks so much. I know it's a busy schedule, so I appreciate you popping out and then being able to have an opportunity to talk some shop.
Anytime, Jaron. You're the best, pal. Appreciate it, bud.
Thanks, man. You have a good one.
Thanks, bud.
This is AJ Brown, and you're talking with TD.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Pete Rock. Yeah. That's that old school, Elijah.
Oh, yeah.
That goes back. The 90s, man. P Rock and CL Smooth. Straighten it out.
Around my time. And by my time, I mean the time I was being born, specifically.
Oh, man. You ain't had to make me feel like that. But it's all good.
I learned Pete Rock and CL Smooth from playing NBA Street Volume 2.
Yeah, I remember you said that. I remember you said, yeah, man, that's classic hip hop right there, man. Pete Rock
stuff.
And CL Smooth, man. And it was. It was always dope because you could put their stuff on. You never had to worry about cursing or anything like that. You know what I'm saying? So you could play it around anyone who wants to listen.
Perfect for this medium right here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because I know sometimes we had a bump, you know what I mean? And we'd be like,
we play it close. We played it close a couple times. Yeah, we live on the edge.
Yeah, but hey, that's how you're supposed to do it, man. Life on the edge, man. That's what you do. Speaking of life on the edge and speaking of straightening it out, that's what the Titans have to do.
Segway.
And defensively. Absolutely. And life on the edge, man. There's a lot of fans who are on the edge after hearing that Mike Vrabel named Shane Bowen the defensive coordinator. And I get it. Like, after seeing some of the things, you know, that happened, and we know the third down situation. We know the red zone touchdown scoring percentage. We know, there weren't many things that went right. However, I think you have to look at big picture. And I know – you know, it's easy to just point to the defensive coordinator or the play caller at the time and Shane Bowen and say, hey, it's all your fault. I don't really find that to be true, though, Elijah, because here, let me ask you this, right? If you design and call a twist up front, right, and let's say, you know, Jeffrey Simmons shoots the gap and Harold Landry loops inside and you have – we'll just look at those two. Howard Landry loops inside. He finds a clear path to the quarterback, but and has him dead to right, but doesn't bring him down. Is that on the coordinator?
Hard to blame Shane Bowen for that.
Right. That's what happens a lot. I'm not saying it happened with Landry doing. I'm not here to point any particular player out, but it happened a lot where guys had quarterbacks dead to rights. They didn't sack them. Is that the scheme or is that execution? I would say it's execution. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, I'm going to play both sides, right? Because there are multiple times, you know, it's third and six. You got Jonathan Joseph playing 10 yards off the ball. Hey, man, let's have a conversation. Why are you doing this? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So there are things about the scheme that do have to get fixed. But to their credit, as the year went on, these are things they addressed. You start to see the corners play a little bit closer. You start to see a little more press coverage. It was because he started trusting the receiver, or the corners. That was one of the things why, one of the reasons I had in mind when I said to Chris that you might want to bring Desmond King back. Mm-hmm. You know, because as he continued to get acclimated into the scheme and into the way of practicing, playing, et cetera, that defense got better. Now, was it just on him? No, obviously it wasn't just on him. Other players began to step up as well. But I think it's really important that we look at the players as well. You can't just put it on Shane Bowen and Mike Vrabel. I think you have to look at the players as well. And, I mean, when you're fielding three outside linebackers per game, it's going to be a little tough. One of their goals entering the season was what? Make sure Harold Landry didn't play extensive snaps. Now, off the top of my head, I'll say he probably played 80-plus percentage of the snaps this past year. That's a lot of snaps. And a lot for a guy that you want to use as a slingshot coming off the edge. Because he's a fastball coming off the edge. Now, granted, he's working on other moves, but you want him to be fresh on pass rushing situations. You want him to be fresh. So that's something that you have to look at when you're looking at this examining this whole situation. But let me tell you this, though, because there's a few stats. You know, there's one that really stood out to me. They finished seventh in takeaways.
Opportunistic.
Those 23 takeaways led to 71 of the 491 points the Titans scored last season. They ranked seventh in interceptions with 15. That was the most that they've had since 2012 when they had 19. There are positives, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. There are positives. So I'm going to point those out. But there are definitely negatives. You know what I mean? We addressed it before. They tied with, what is it, the Chargers, I think it was. They tied for 19 sacks with the Broncos.
You have the 82 Broncos, 82, 83 Broncos, very early 80s, and a couple other teams from around that era, the Falcons as well.
The Falcons, and I want to say, I don't remember what the other team was, but there were two teams that had less sacks. So you see a stat floating around that they tied for the worst. They didn't tie for the worst. They tied for the third worst because the Falcons, mm-hmm. and there was another team.
The Dolphins, wasn't it?
It was the Dolphins. I think it was 79 Dolphins.
79 Dolphins,
to make the playoffs. They had less than 19 sacks.
Ironically, all three of those teams lost in their first playoff game.
Call it four now because the Titans did. That Falcons team was 7-9. Remember, you laughed about that. Mm-hmm. But I say all that to say there's area for improvement, but there's also things to look at that are positive. And I thought it was pretty cool. Jim Wyatt, he actually dropped a post on Shane Bowen, and it was about Kevin Byard. And everyone is saying, you know, Kevin Byard regressed, and they are correct. He regressed this past season, as the whole defense did. But they said, well, okay, well, why would Kevin Byard back that decision? Like, why would he be okay with it? Why would the locker room be okay with it? I think the locker room understands that it's not just the coach. I think they understand that they have to play better. And I know people hate to say here when Coach Vrabel says we have to coach better and play better, but these are the facts.
He's not wrong. I mean, if they played better and coached better, they wouldn't have to address those questions.
So that being said, Wyatt was able to talk to Kevin Byard about Shane Bowen, and this is what he had to say. At the end of the day, I think Shane is a good coach.
And I think it is kind of unfair for a guy to get a promotion to a new job and everybody just pounds on him as if he's a bad coach. I really do think he's a great coach. It sounds like an endorsement. And he went on. And I think if you look at the situation for us this past year as it relates to our defensive performance, I am real big on accountability. I'm not going to be one of those guys because I didn't have my best year statistically to say, hey, it's the defensive coordinator's fault or it's because of this or because of that. I'm going to always look at myself first. And I think when you look at our entire defense as a whole last year, it is everybody's fault we didn't play better. It is not one person's fault. It is not Shane Bowen's fault. It is everybody who had their hand in the pot from the front seven to the back end to everybody. We all could have done better. Oh, and there's more. I think Shane is going to do a good job next year, and I'm excited to see how us as a defense, we take the lessons we learned from this year and fix those and have a better season. This is a game-to-game, year-to-year league, and if we put a better performance out there next year, everybody will be saying how Shane is a really good coach, and I am proud of how he stepped up. That's really in a nutshell. Always, you can always turn to Kevin Byard to speak the truth and give you a great coach.
Get some leadership.
Yeah,
there.
That's leadership.
It's a good, that's good quality.
Exactly what we talked about with Chris Sanders a little bit earlier. So, look, man, I know it's popular opinion to say it's all on Shane Bowen. You have one of the players, one of the leaders on the defense, saying it absolutely isn't. So are there ways that they could get better? Yes, absolutely. Trey Hendrickson, you know, I'm sorry, Elijah, but he's somebody.
He's a bad man, and they're not in a good salary cap situation.
Exactly. He's somebody they need to look at. Mm-hmm. Carl Lawson, we've spoken about him. Romeo Okwara, you know, he's another guy. He jumped over David Quisenberry trying to, you know what I mean, cut him, and he sacked Tannehill in the end zone. Rest assured that is something that's in their mind. John Robinson saw it, you know. So those are some guys. I want to see what happens with Yannick Ngakoue, you know, what the Ravens do. That's another guy. I think they could find fits. And then you have the draft, which will, man, we got a lot of edge rushers coming. We're going to have Patrick Jones on the show, Rashard Weaver.
That's a name to keep an eye on.
We got some guys that we'll have on, man. Yeah, I'm looking forward to this draft season. But just keeping it on track here, the nuts and bolts of it, the long and short of it is relax. It's not that bad right now. You know, give this thing a chance to play out. It's interesting, right, because people have called for this team. They would say over and over again, 9-7, 9-7. I'm tired of 9-7 years. We have to get better. Well, this team delivered an 11-5 year.
Voila. Exactly. Division championship.
Exactly. In a division champ. When the season opens, the first game at Nissan Stadium, there'll be a flag on a banner dropped. AFC South Division Champions. And you look at what's going on in the division now, there's a good chance you'll have another one drop. Relax. It's going to be all right. Give it a chance to work out. I think they're going to make the right moves. In free agency, I think they're going to draft the right players. And I think this team is in good shape. They really are. But end of the day, it could be in good shape as much as you want on paper. The execution has to happen. And that's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying for those who are saying that, hey, Shane Bowen, this is a terrible decision. It's a lot of people said that about Arthur Smith. Remember?
That turned out pretty well.
A lot of people said that about Keith Carter. Remember? So all I'm saying is give things a chance to work out. I know we like to put our stuff in the microwave and heat it up in seconds, but sometimes that slow cook thing is just as good. That's just what was on my mind to close this show out. So, Elijah, man, it's another year or another year. Look at me. It's another opportunity to talk some shop another week. Appreciate you making it happen. We will continue to do this thing. Draft season is coming upon us, and it's time to shine. That's why we grind. Thanks for tuning in. God bless and good night.